Hey everyone, welcome back or welcome to the Human Condition Podcast. Imagine this scenario. Early one morning, you're about to go to work. You put on some nice clothes and head to work. On your way, you notice a small child drowning in a muddy pool. To save the child, you'd have to get in the muddy pool and pull the child out. It's not at all dangerous to you, but it would mean that your clean clothes would get dirty. Now the question is, are you morally obliged to save the child from drowning? I'm guessing any person with the least bit of humanity would say, yes, I am morally obliged to save the child, and it would be morally wrong to not do so. Even if there are other people around not bothering about the drowning child, I still ought to make that effort to save the child, because the value of saving a child's life easily outweighs the cost of, say, getting your clothes dirty or being late to work. Alright, fair enough. Now, what if there's a child who's not dying literally in front of you, but say in some other part of the world, and say it's within your means to save them with no great cost or danger to you? Are you morally obliged in this case to save the child? And is there a morally relevant difference between saving the child in front of you and someone who is across the globe from you? Peter Singer, who is one of the most well-known effective altruists, thinks that there isn't a morally relevant difference between the two cases and that you ought to help the child in both cases, as long as it doesn't cost you a great deal or put you in danger. But what exactly is altruism and effective altruism, you ask? Well, we say someone is altruistic if their behavior is motivated by a desire to help someone, not for their own sake, but for the other person's sake. You could think of it as something that's the opposite of acting in self-interest or acting selfishly. Now, behavioral altruism has been a discussion among scientists as they argue that altruistic tendencies help species survive by being helpful to each other and developing cooperative behavior. That's a debate for another time, but the kind of altruism we are going to talk about today is a more general empirical altruism that's based on our observations of the society around us, which clearly tells us that there is a fair bit of suffering going on that can be avoided. In a lot of cases, this can be avoided by financial aid, but also through pooling in resources, energy, and time. Effective altruism is a combination of being altruistic along with practically choosing how to be altruistic in the most effective way. In an episode of Friends, Joey challenges Phoebe by saying that there is no unselfish good deed. Phoebe wants to argue that one could definitely do a good deed that is not selfish, such as her helping out her brother by giving birth to his triplet children. Joey disagrees and says that since she felt good about helping her brother out, it meant that she did the good deed not purely out of selflessness, but in her own self-interest. Now, this is a genuine moral argument that philosophers have been discussing for a long time. Altruism is a behavior that is motivated by a desire to help others and not for one's own sake. People like David Hume, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Adam Smith, and others have said that sometimes human motivation is genuinely altruistic. We do stuff for others which has no element of self-interest in it. It is purely for the benefit of the other. But many philosophers disagreed. Hobbes famously said, and I quote, "No man giveth but with intention of good to himself, because gift is voluntary, and of all voluntary acts, the object is to every man his own good, of which, if men see they shall be frustrated, there will be no beginning of benevolence or trust, nor consequently of mutual help." End quote. This is a view called egoism, which is kind of what Joey was saying. It says that all human motivation is in their own self-interest. Our ego is at the center of whatever we do, and we do it to serve the ego, or ourself. Basically, the genuine altruists and egoists agree that while sometimes people help others, they disagree on why they do it. Whichever side you're on, What's important to people who have a practical view on altruism is that you are being altruistic, that you are doing something to help others, whether in your own self-interest or whether you act selflessly with no benefit to you at all. These people do not care if you have ulterior motives that dictate why you help others, because they are interested only in the practicality of it. Because these people believe that given the suffering in the world that could be avoided, we ought to make an effort to reduce that suffering by contributing either our money, time, or effort. These people believe that it's not just important to contribute and donate to different causes in order to reduce suffering, but it's just as important to be intelligent in deciding where our contribution is going to end up. That's where the effective part of effective altruism comes into play. Because not all charity organizations end up doing the same amount of good. Some take a lot of money and do very little good to very few people. Some organizations, on the other hand, make the most use of the resources they have and try to do the most good they can. Many effective altruists propose donating 10% of your income every month if you're able to manage the rest of your expenses without much trouble. In India, many people donate shitloads of money to temples for no good reason other than to gain good karma. A lot of people pay 10% of their income to the church as something called tithe. But for what? For the church to build some new fancy stuff that no one really requires? In the early days, the church required offerings for their operation, but I'm not sure how relevant this is now. This 10% could be of far greater impact when put to the right use. Now, in this sense, effective altruism resonates with utilitarianism, which is a normative theory that says we ought to make moral decisions in a way that produces most good to the most number of people. You may have seen the famous trolley problem example, where there's two train tracks, and on one track is a single person tied up, and on another track are five people who are tied up. The train is moving towards the five people, and we have an option to press a lever, which will turn the train towards the other track on which the one person is lying. So, should we pull a lever or not? A utilitarian would say that since what is morally correct is to produce the most amount of good to the most number of people, we ought to pull the lever and save the five people by killing the one. But effective altruism is not exactly a moral theory like utilitarianism. It's not a normative theory that tells us how to act morally in the world. It's more like a project that people take up to reduce the suffering in the world. You don't always have to be effectively altruistic with everything you do in life. You just have to contribute to this project because you believe that it is a morally responsible thing to do. As the name suggests, the project involves two aspects. One is being altruistic, and the other is doing it effectively. Because as I mentioned earlier, not all charity organizations do the same amount of good. So we need to be smart about it to choose how we contribute. Peter Singer gives an example in his 2013 TED Talk that it takes about $40,000 to train a guide dog for a blind person, whereas it takes about $20 to $50 to cure a blind person if they have trachoma. In developing countries, there are more than a million people overall suffering from trachoma. Now, Singer's claim is not entirely accurate because not everyone who gets a trachoma surgery is cured of blindness. There is usually only a small improvement in their vision. But there is about one case of full-blown blindness that could be averted for every 10 to 20 trachoma surgeries. But the point Singer makes is that if we are to follow the effective altruistic motto, given a choice between donating to organizations that help train blind dogs and organizations that help trachoma patients, we should be donating to the charities that help people suffering from trachoma as it produces more overall relief from suffering. Take another example. The charity research organization GiveWell published a study which compared the impact of two charity organizations that helped prevent malaria in developing countries to those organizations which are focused on improving academic facilities in the US. For every $2,300 it spends, the former group would be able to save one person from dying in a developing country, whereas the latter would see a slight improvement in the academic outcome of a student for every $10,000 spent. This is why effective altruism suggests taking a rational approach by trying to maximize the well-being in the world. Of course, one addendum here is that effective altruism also proposes that we do not violate certain constraints because we have obligations like putting our family and friends first ahead of strangers, an obligation to not lie, steal, or do harm to others, and so on. These obligations often outweigh the obligation to promote good. We can't just try to steal money from banks and rich people to donate to people in need because doing that would bring about a lot of good. No, we're not Robin Hood, alright? We have a moral obligation to promote good effectively by being altruistic, but without violating certain constraints. Now, naturally, many questions arise when someone says we have a moral obligation to do something like charity. Firstly, even if I do donate to charity, how do I know it's being used for the purpose they said it was going to be used for? What's the point if most of the funds are used up for administrative work, logistics, or simply disappearing into corrupt hands? These are all fair questions. I myself was once part of an organization which claimed to help several NGOs across India that worked on issues like child marriage prevention, child education, girls' protection, and so on. 2 days in, I realized this was an absolute scam. The majority of the funds were used as incentives to pay the quote-unquote volunteers who showed up at different places to pitch and collect donations for the charity. The manager of this ostensibly charitable organization drove a really posh car and was simply opulent in his clothes and the accessories he wore. It was kind of an early red flag, but I let it pass. I mean, some people like to wear expensive, florid stuff, right? That's fine. The breaking point, though, was when he told me on the second day that my job was to get 5 bakras to donate that day. A bakra means something like an idiot or a fool. I was just simply shocked and left that place immediately. There are quite a few organizations like these, and due to their logistical and administrative outreach, they can get many people to donate to charities that are simply not very effective. Another such example is the PM CARES Fund of India. It stands for Citizen Assistance and Relief in Emergency Situations. In the ongoing COVID crisis of India, many people are suffering with a lack of equipment such as oxygen cylinders, ventilators, or medication to deal with the pandemic. Many people simply don't have the means to sustain themselves and their family. The PM CARES Fund is supposed to care for these people, and they've collected a pretty big sum, perhaps around 6,000 crores in Indian rupees, if I'm not mistaken. But there is a clear absence of transparency in the way the funds are handled. The details of the donors, the amounts received individually, and the expenditure of these funds, none of these are in the public domain. A group of about 100 civil servants have written to the Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, criticizing the lack of transparency, and the government basically said that the fund is not under public authority, and because of the Right to Information Act of 2005, they don't disclose details. But if it's not under public authority, why would the Prime Minister, the Finance Minister, the Home Minister, and the Defence Minister lend their official designations as trustees of the fund? My point is that even if it's not a scam, people should avoid donations to such funds whose objectives are not clear and whose effectiveness in causing relief to the needed is not known. These are just few examples. But my point is that we should donate to charities that we believe do the most good, not those that have the best marketing strategy. Otherwise, the best charities will be those that are best at soliciting funds, not those that are best at making the world a better place. It is sometimes difficult to take a rational approach towards helping others because many people donate to charities based on their own emotional values. In a 2018 experiment conducted by Jonathan Berman of the London Business School, volunteers were asked to read about a woman who was deciding which of two charities to donate to, one less effective, but that she had an emotional connection to because it helped homeless people in her community, and the other, far more effective, but emotionally distant, which was devoted to feeding children in Africa. Although the volunteers recognized the second charity as more effective, they believed it would be better for the woman to donate to the option for which she had an emotional connection. So it's important to do thorough research before contributing any significant amount of money. There are in fact organizations like GiveWell and 80,000 Hours which are established solely to help people do their research and find them suitable charity organizations to donate to. So you should check them out. Effective altruism isn't always about donating money particularly. People could also be effective altruists, for example, in the career they choose. That's also something that the organization 80,000 Hours helps people with. It's called 80,000 Hours because that's about the number of hours an average individual's career would last. That's a massive amount of effort poured in by one individual, so if these efforts are directed towards reducing suffering in the world, then that would provide relief to a lot of people. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next time.